What's new with you today?
Nothing.
I feel like you're hiding something.
Nope.
Do you have a secret?
No.
Do you have some sort of secret? Why won't you tell me? Okay, whatever.
Don't worry about it.
Megan, is it that your hair is newly dyed purple?
That's a fact. That's a fact. I wouldn't call it a secret, seeing as it's not a secret I can easily hide without a hat.
That's true.
Which I don't own a lot of. I own very few hats.
Really?
And even fewer, like, hats that I could hide all of my hair under.
I pegged you as a hat person.
Really?
Yeah, like those hats that Blossom used to wear back in the 90s.
Thanks.
Hey everybody, welcome to Magic the Amateuring, the show that's for magic amateurs, players returning to the game, and anybody who likes to have a giggle out of the giggle pit. I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm your other host, Megan.
Welcome. On today's show, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, man. We're going to talk to you a little bit about Modern Masters 2. We've been doing a little bit of sealed play testing, which has been pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I would say it's insane.
So, opening thoughts on the sealed format.
Absolutely. We're going to make a couple of corrections to last week's episode.
That's, you know what? We're both still noobs, Megan.
We really are. We're going to answer a listener question, and then we're going to get serious.
We're going to get deep up in here.
Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't have said it that way. Okay.
Like a pool.
Like a pool, we're going to jump off the deep end into the 10-foot area.
Exactly. And in this pool, the deep area is the serious part of the pool where the serious swimmers swim.
That's right. The real Olympians.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that usually we're hanging out in like the shallow to middle part of the pool.
I'm in the kiddie pool with all the pee in it, usually.
Gross.
It's a metaphor.
For what?
Me being a real dum-dum on the show.
Okay. I mean, okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. We're actually going to talk about a controversy that sort of erupted on Twitter. When was this? Like a week and a half ago?
Yeah, a little over a week ago.
During Not GP this Atlantic
past
City.
Weekend, but the weekend before at yeah. GP Atlantic City. So it'll be interesting and hopefully a little bit thought-provoking.
I hope so.
For our listeners.
And yeah, it's a little bit of a departure for us because we're normally very silly. So we hope that you take time to just, you know, say, hey, these girls are gonna get real for a second, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Correction party.
Well, you guys, last week I was the worst person on earth.
Well, I
was
didn't
the actual
help.
Worst person on earth, and I talked about how I could not find any colorless creatures that were not either Eldrazi or artifact creatures. And then we immediately started talking about Scion of Eugene being in Maria's pool.
Yeah.
So,
we got about 10,000 listener emails.
Yes, being like,
calling us out.
Excuse us. And, yep, we realize it.
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Scion of Eugene, he's like a ghost. He's like a ghost. But he looks like as I talked about last week, he looks like a stinking artifact.
He really does.
Anyway.
Well, because he's colorless. Yeah. That's how we think of artifacts. Yeah. But I think we're learning a really big lesson about not judging a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it looks like an artifact doesn't mean that it is one.
Right.
So don't judge. That's what I'm saying.
Lesson. Hashtag lessons. We also mentioned the mechanic proliferate, which is returning in Modern Masters 2. And we talked about, I had the question of like, what would happen if I had +1/+1 counter on my guy and a -1/-1 counter on my guy at the same time?
And we originally said that you would just proliferate both.
Yeah.
But it turns out that if you have a +1/+1 counter and one and a -1/-1 counter, they cancel each other out and they both fall off.
They fall off. That's so weird to me.
It's kind of like when there's too many rabbits riding on a turtle's back.
Adorable.
Yeah. You have like one mean rabbit and one nice rabbit, and the mean rabbit kicks the nice rabbit off, but the mean rabbit like has his own like ricochet effect. And like because he hit the other rabbit, he kind of bounces away also.
Do you want to know something I saw recently? What? I saw a hawk drop half a rabbit onto a field in front of me. It was like
grim.
It was like swooping. Yeah, I know. It swooped over and it was like, and I was like, oh my god. I went over and looked. It was the bottom half of a rabbit.
That's really gross.
I mean, I was like, is there a better, like, worse omen that I could have, like,
no, I don't think so.
Seen?
I don't think so.
But then I thought.
Also, that hawk is super wasteful.
I know. He only ate the head.
What a motherfucker.
I mean, stupid hawk. The I best know. Part's the butt. Everybody knows that. Except people who do eat rabbit ears first. So maybe he's one of those rabbit ears first kind of people that eat on the chocolate bunny.
He thought it was a chocolate rabbit. Mm-hmm. He started eating it and he was like, my bad.
On the other hand, it did just drop 2 rabbit's feet by me, which is a good luck charm.
That's true. It probably, like the +1, +1 and -1, -1 counters, canceled each other out.
Nailed it. Dear Abby. Hi, love the show. Real fun with good info. Thanks. You're not wrong. I'm a new player, about 1.5 months, but I've been playing a lot, 3 times a week. I've built a deck on a budget that others have said should be fine, but it's still homebrew, but I haven't won a match at a shop tournament in 3 weeks. When should I start worrying that I'm doing something wrong? I would say it's just being a new player, but tonight I had my arse, hope this person's British, handed to me by a person who has played 2 times, and now I'm concerned that I'm missing something fundamental, or is this just how it is?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to write in. We really appreciate it. And 2, great question.
It is a good question.
Really great question. 1, I would always say that the learning curve is so much steeper than you ever realize that it is.
That's so true.
It extends so much farther than you would ever have anticipated.
Yes.
I don't think that there is a top to the learning curve.
No.
It's in fact just a learning exponential.
I mean, and it's equation. It keeps going forever. Yeah. Even when you're super good, you're still not super good, right?
Yes.
That's the nature of magic. And it's constantly changing. Maybe if there was like 1 set and that was all it ever was.
You could become like a complete master.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that's a thing.
Yeah.
So first off, I would say, while we totally understand the need, if you're playing standard or other constructed formats, to have home brews. Because we also are not made of money.
Yeah.
That it's like, so yes, we understand that that's totally a like economic necessity thing.
And sometimes it, just plain fun.
Exactly. And it can also be a really great time. However, there are still going to be a lot of people at local events, even just something like an FNM, who are playing tier 1 and tier 2 decks, from the competitive circuit. And those are just, like, it's really difficult to have a budget homebrew that's able to reliably or consistently.
Beat those decks, I mean, they're tier 1 and tier 2 for a reason. It's because they're really good and people have worked out the formulas. They've played a lot of games with these cards.
Very finely tuned them.
They know that these are the best decks. And so even perhaps the craziest and pretty solid homebrew could hold up a chance against these things. In the end, they're just really powerful and have built their sideboards accordingly to deal with most of the threats out there too.
Yeah. So I would say as you are learning, the combination of playing someone who both knows more than you and is playing a more finely tuned competitive deck is a really big hurdle to overcome.
Yes.
As far as getting beaten by a new player, sometimes it's just a bad matchup, man.
Yeah, and sometimes it just flat out happens, even if the matchup is in your favor.
Sometimes you just have really, like, crap luck. Maybe they have just, like, I mean, 1.5 months is definitely more than 2 days, but sometimes it's, like, they might have an intuitive sense. They might have a background that's lent itself better. I feel like eventually, at the very beginnings, people who have majors in, like, math and logic do have an edge. And it's something that can be weeded out over time, right? If no matter what background you come for, if you come from, if you play long enough, you can overcome that. But, you know, you never know. They might have a background that, at the very beginning of playing Magic, is really giving them a hand.
I mean, I've certainly been, you know, Meg and I have been playing now for more than 2.5 years, and we've certainly been beaten by people who've been playing less, you know, not as long as we have. I mean, it just happens. I mean, you have to also take into account variance, which will happen throughout your Magic career, which means, you know, Magic is not chess. In chess, the better player always wins. In Magic, that's not always true, because you're going to draw a hand with no lands. You're simply not going to curve out as well as your opponent, something like that. So you have to take that into account as well. And don't let
it
get you down.
It's part of what makes it a much better game than chess, because
I agree.
Chess can suck it.
I agree.
Chess is the worst.
I think Magic is way more fun, but then again, I'm not a Russian.
That's true. Chess never made me want to do anything except punch someone in the face.
Yeah, I was in chess club once.
Ugh, how did that go?
I just really wanted to play mind games with my opponent. Like, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
That's how I wanted to play chess. I did not want to study the format and think about the correct moves. I wanted to be like, so tell me, how's that girl you used to date? Oh, I heard she's dating somebody new. Oh, checkmate.
But life checkmate. Yeah. Not like, not game state checkmate.
No, that's, I wanted life to, lead, I want to lead to game state checkmate through my life checkmate. Once when okay. I was playing my dad, when story time, I learned when I was very young, I was like, hey, I distracted him while I made a pretty good play.
Uh-huh.
I think I was like, look over there, a unicorn or something. And I like had moved my queen. He's like, did you move? I'm like, yeah.
Oh my God.
And he didn't notice. And then I had him in checkmate and he was like, oh my God. Why am I so bad at this? My 8-year-old beat me. It was one of my proudest moments. So,
do you want to know, like, one of my favorite, like, world things that has happened in the world is there was this.
Right, what a category.
Yeah, it's a thing. There's this Hungarian guy. His name is Laszlo Polgár, and he was a chess teacher and an educational psychologist. And he had this theory, and he was like, I can raise any child to be a chess prodigy. So he married a woman who was also totally into this idea, and they had 3 daughters, and they raised all 3 of them to be chess prodigies.
That's insane. I remember you talking about this before.
It was amazing.
And they like, all like insane. Were literal chess prodigies.
Yeah, right? Like at one point 2 of them were like the #1 and #2 female players, chess players in the world.
That's nuts.
Isn't that insane?
Okay, everybody out there, homework. Marry somebody else who's really into making your child a magic prodigy and make your child a magic prodigy.
Exactly. And you can read his book, Bring Up Genius, wherein he lays out kind of like his ideas and the precepts that he used to raise his daughters.
I'm like thinking now, if my parents had tried to make me a chess prodigy, like, would I have been into it? I don't think I would have. I think I would have completely rebelled against it because I don't want to sit there and learn chess all day.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's it's kind so of... weird. I gotta read that book because nature or nurture, you know what I mean? Were they just born because both their parents were into chess, like naturally predispositioned to want to sit there and move little pieces on a board?
Yeah.
We're really ragging on chess right now.
Fuck it's chess! It's just insane. He literally, he and his wife, like, did their courtship through letters. He wrote her letters being like, this is the project that I want that I want to have. And she was like, yeah.
I hope that was their actual letters. Like, he's like, this is the project I want to have. And she just wrote back, yeah. And then nailed it.
That's it. Like, yeah. Period.
Oh, God. So what we're saying is, hang in there, man. There's going to be a lot of losses and a lot of wins over your magic life. Don't let it get you down. I know I certainly lost all the time when I started playing. I remember there being a run where I remember this, like, talking to you. It was in my house, Megan. And I was like, I haven't won like a game in like a week or something like that. I remember thinking that. And you know what? Your gameplay will improve and you will start losing less. But the straight fact is you just have to play more and it's got to be more than 2 months. I mean.
And sometimes you will, like, do the same thing. I still go through phases where I just can't seem to win a damn game.
Yeah.
Which is also, like, you also have to look at it in terms of sometimes, you know, you go through learning curves and then you kind of plateau for a while. And plateaus can feel like downward slopes, even though they are, in fact, just a plateau.
Right.
Because you're not growing at the rate that you just were. So that's kind of, you know, good to note. Sometimes it just means that... A learning growth spurt is coming along. So eat a lot of bananas because you're going to need that potassium so your legs don't hurt.
Solid advice for any point in life.
Yeah. I mean, but especially when you're growing.
Isn't potassium supposed to be good for when you have like leg cramps or something too?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And those leg cramps when you're a kid always come from growing pains.
I didn't grow as a child.
When did you grow?
I was born this height.
That's terrifying.
You're not my mom.
Thank God for that. Anyways, the other thing I would recommend is there are lots of great articles, but I think that one of the best ones that's not about one specific draft format or one specific constructed format or deck is Reed Duke's Level 1 series on the Wizards website, which is really just has a lot of great fundamental concepts that I think can help you, no matter what point you're at, get better at the game. Because it helps you think about things in new ways or maybe notice things about your playing that you hadn't noticed before. And I think that a lot of improving is just noticing the things that you were previously overlooking.
Right. So head to dailymtg.com and look for Reed Duke's.
Good fucking luck from there.
Very ye well.
On a wish and a prayer.
On this journey.
Go to the website and see what you can find.
If you have a question for us, you can feel free to email us, magicthamaturing@gmail.com. We also have a contact form on our website, magicthamaturing.com. Or if you want to be quick and dirty, tweet at us at MTAcast.
Next, you guys, we're going to give you just a little preview into Modern Masters.
Dipping the toe into the water.
Sealed format. We did a little play testing with a group of Minnesotans who are getting ready to go to Vegas.
Yes.
I was blown away by the amount I learned in constructing one sealed pool and playing games with it.
Yeah.
It was mind-boggling.
If you're not like us, we had never played with many of the cards from this set because we are newer players. Some of them we remember, like Muldrifter, who is our friend back in Modern Masters 1.
He's our best friend.
Great. And Court Homunculus, he's back and arguably better this time around.
He's got lots of artifact friends.
We learned so much doing this. Our friend, what he did was take older cards and print off pictures of the Modern Masters cards and put them in little sleeves and then made a cube out of that to support eight sealed decks simulated.
Yeah, eight simulated sealed pools.
It was a great idea.
It's an insane undertaking.
I mean, yeah.
It is an absolutely insane undertaking.
You got to have some free time. But wonderful, wonderful tool for practicing and totally free.
Yes.
Totally free. Megan, what was a few of your takeaways?
One, I felt like there were a couple of, I felt like it's just as important to remember in this as the new set comes out and people are talking about all the archetypes, that archetypes are always stronger in draft than they are in sealed.
Yes.
I would try and go too heavy into artifacts or too heavy into proliferate. And I made my deck slightly weaker by being too hard into the theme and being less about just having really good, solid, consistent cards.
That you did not include because it wasn't on theme that you think you should have. Because you made a blue-green proliferate deck.
Yeah, and it was pretty good. I just feel like I took out some token makers, some green convoke token makers and stuff like that that would have just given me a better creature base.
Sure.
And I still had some sweet proliferate synergies going on, but my deck wasn't so much about those.
Sure.
And I had made my curve a little bit weaker, I think. And I made it a little bit stronger after I went back and I took out some proliferate cards. And I added in some cards that just helped with my creatures, my creature curve.
Yeah. Proliferate seemed like a super sweet, fun mechanic.
Yeah, tons of fun.
Very powerful.
I can't wait to draft around that.
That'd be a great draft.
Yeah. I have to say, Thrumming Bird, insane card.
Yeah, I agree. Thrumming Bird ruined me.
Yeah. That card is disgustingly good.
And you're like, it's just a 1-1 for 1 when it does damage, proliferate, but...
Don't forget to graft onto that motherfucker.
Oh my god. Yeah, exactly.
It's real good.
So that was pretty epic.
Yeah. I also consistently forgot about different graft things. Oh, I need to get better at that.
Fairly
than that.
Tricky. It's a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, I just get because it's something that I haven't played with before. Again, going back to the things that you don't notice in your play. Mm-hmm. I feel like this new set, I was skipping so many things.
Well, you can't put a die on top of your library to remind you to graft.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. No. When you play a creature.
Maria, what did you learn?
Well, I played a very highly synergistic deck.
Very cool.
In my first build, which was artifacts. So I played Affinity. And the reason I did this was because that was exactly what my pool wanted me to do. I had 10 billion artifacts. That I had all his dust. That was my number one card, which destroys all colored permanents except artifacts.
No, it makes you sack them.
Yeah, you sack them. So not only is it just destroying them, it's like, no, you kill them. Motherfucker.
Well, it also gets around like indestructible.
Correct.
Which is pretty sweet.
So that's a good card in this archetype.
I said it's a good card in general.
In general, probably play that card. It's 7 mana. Here, this is what I'll say first. So there's bounce lands. The Ravnica bounce lands have returned in this set. And I found getting to 7 mana in every game was not hard whatsoever.
Yeah, that's true.
It was not hard. So I'm not like afraid to even play, you know, an Eldrazi. Just not afraid. And especially if you have spawn, you know, to help you cast that thing. Like, Emrah, cool. Okay, that's getting a little much. But I don't think I'd be afraid of
flinching.
Of 8 or 9 mana. No, I was definitely not flinching on 7.
Nice.
So that's just throwing that out there. For sealed, not necessarily draft. But so I drafted Affinity. I mean, sealed pool. Built Affinity. I had 2 cranial platings, which is just...
that's bonkers.
Absolutely nuts if you have enough artifacts, which I pretty much had only artifacts. However, my artifacts were not particularly powerful. You know, it was very aggressive. Affinity, I think, wants to be a very aggressive deck. And if you can't come out fast enough, you're probably going to lose. So, which is another trap in sealed, right? Building an aggressive deck can sometimes be a trap. So, just watch out for that. I think that's still true in this format. Although, I think there are the tools there to build an aggressive deck if you get them in your pool. Mm-hmm. Just what Maria has learned over the years is stay away from that if you can, by all means. But I wanted to try it out just to see if it could possibly be a thing. So I did have some insane draws where I had put like both cranial platings on something, you know, and I had 4 artifacts out there. It was just like disgusting. That and splashing cards was extraordinarily easy.
Yeah.
Building a mana base I found to be the most difficult thing, especially if you're a new player, you're going to want to practice because you're going to get tripped.
Really throw you for a loop.
Yeah, you only got 30 minutes to build that thing if you're playing in Vegas or you're playing in a sealed PTQ or something like that. So, get ready.
Get ready.
Get ready. The good news is that splashing, very easy. I splashed for red, for black, for blue. I mean.
Yeah.
And it was fine.
For sure. I found a lot of my pools were at least 3 colors.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe splashing a 4th.
Yeah.
And I could consistently get my mana, especially if you're like base green. Or red, like all red also has some land cyclers. I didn't see other cards in other colors, but I also wasn't super deep in other colors. But green has land cycling, which is helpful as well.
And there's artifacts to help you fix your colors as well. So there is a lot out there. And I know Owen Turtenwald had an article that said, basically, I think you're always supposed to build 5 color. You know, and I think he was being a little bit hyperbolic, but I sort of think in a way that it's true. Like, don't be afraid because you very well could have the tools at your disposal to play absolutely every color.
For sure, man.
Even purple.
Well, that concludes the normal portion of our show, where, you know, we make fun of chess players.
Which we do on every episode.
Absolutely. So tune in next week for some, while we take chess down chess slams. Players a little bit more. But now we're gonna sit down with and have a chat with a couple of guests on the show. So that's our upcoming segment. And we hope that you give our serious side a shot.
I should point out that we're not going to talk about the social shaming aspect of how information was revealed at GP Atlantic City about this person that we're going to talk about in the next segment, because I feel that's an entirely different discussion altogether. Okay.
So if you keep up on Twitter or Reddit or on coverage in general, you may be aware that at Grand Prix Atlantic City, there was a little bit of an incident with it being brought to people's attention that one of the players in the top 8 was, in fact, had a sexual assault conviction on his record. And it sort of from there blossomed into a couple of different players and other members of the community talking about, well, what role should that maybe play in someone being featured on coverage? And what role should that play in our community? So Maria and I were thinking that it would be very interesting and behoove us to have a discussion about that. So to do that today, we've brought on two people. We have Matthias Hunt, who does coverage for Star City Games. And we thought that that would be a great voice to add because he approaches it from the coverage angle and the logistics that go into that. So Matthias, welcome.
Hey, welcome. I should mention that for this conversation, I am not representing Star City Games here. So my opinions are my own, but I'm really happy to talk about the issue.
Yes, absolutely. And then we also have Drew Levin on, who is one of the individuals who first brought the player's history to the forefront and kind of started the conversation on that. So we thought that it would be great to have him on to talk about one, again, the role of this in coverage in general. Yeah. So, Drew, welcome as well.
Thank you. And although I write for StarCityGames.com, I also am not here representing them, and my opinions are my own as well.
Yes.
We're just mono Star City Games employees on this podcast.
Contractors. It's a fine distinction.
Okay. That's fair. Maria and I are both members of the podcast Magic the Amateuring. We will be representing the point of view of Magic the Amateuring.
Yes. We also both have women parts.
Yes. So we will be representing ourselves.
Yeah, which we actually
were. Who are also, women.
I mean, we were saying just how astounding it was that the amount of conversation that has happened on this topic has really happened in the absence of having women talk about it, which is really just amazing to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Maria and I definitely had the conversation between the two of us of, well, is this something that we want to talk about on the podcast? We're definitely known for being a little bit more lighthearted. A lot more lighthearted.
Yes, a lot more. But, you know, we felt like we needed to have a platform to kind of discuss this, and being two women who host a podcast, which is kind of unconventional in the magic sphere, that we had a good place for this to happen. And it was a bit shocking to me as well how few female voices were involved in the conversation from the beginning.
Yeah, so I think, you know, from our own perspective, that was definitely something that persuaded us, or we persuaded each other, that we should definitely have a conversation about this. In part because we do offer what is sometimes a unique perspective in the magic tacosphere. Talk.
Did you say that? Okay. I thought you meant like taco, like the food.
It sounded like
we're,
that.
We're on a culinary podcast, right? Yes. I got that right? I'm in the right
yes.
place?
In the magic tacosphere, which is the group of magic players who just really particularly enjoy like Mexican food.
The tacosphere sounds amazing right now. I'm so hungry.
Okay. So we can stop by the restaurant tacosphere later. I'm starting that restaurant. But for now, we're going to go ahead and dive in with a couple of kind of questions that we thought up as springing off points for this conversation. So Maria, do you want to intro us into the first one?
Sure. So I guess the main overarching question that this has brought to the forefront, at least for me, is the question of Wizards coverage and if Wizards somehow and the event space, right? So wherever an event is happening, does Wizards of the Coast have a responsibility to create a safe environment? And I suppose we're kind of making some kind of judgment call by saying, oh, people who have violent convictions in their past are somehow contributing to a lack of a safe environment, which is, you know, another question kind of entirely.
Yeah, absolutely. So would either of you like to kind of weigh in on that from the top?
Sure. So I think that an important first question is to sort of ask whose definition of safe environment we're using and to sort of interrogate whether or not there is a uniform enough definition of safe that we can all sort of agree on it, or whether safety is something that individuals define for themselves and engage on their own terms.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. I would say, at least for me, I draw the line at like, as many people have pointed out in this conversation, people with convictions on their records have already served their time, right? They have been a part of the justice system, and they have in many ways already been served, you know, whatever punishment was deemed appropriate for their actions. So I agree with the voices who say, by no means should we ban these people from events. I think that would be very much overstepping any kind of line. Absolutely, magic is something that should be available to everyone who's going to play the game in a respectful way, and everyone who's going to play the game, you know, because they enjoy it.
Yeah, I think for those people who don't know the situation, we are not. It wasn't a recent conviction. This is a player who had a conviction from, I believe, 11 years ago. So as and I think that matters as far as, you know, when you talk about where safety is concerned, you know, if this is like, I think as far as when you discuss, you know, just, okay, so does this player's presence or something make actually the situation physically unsafe? And there actually has been situations before in coverage where Wizards has either coverage banned or just kind of event banned a player who had a conviction that wasn't really very publicized. A few years ago, there's a player who had a drunk driving conviction. I believe it was serious enough that I believe he had a personal monitoring device for a while, and Wizards definitely blocked him off coverage for a couple of years and even requested him not to show up to a few events for a time being. That said, all of that, like, the player still plays to this day. I don't want to throw people's names out. But after about 2 years after the incident, they loosened up on this, and now the player receives basically the same treatment as everyone else.
You know, and thinking about it just from a personal standpoint for me is the question of, like, say I came to know something about a player that made me feel uneasy sitting down opposite playing them, based on, like, whatever, you know, criminal record they had or whatever. I think that in that moment, I just have to make the choice for myself, right? Am I going to forfeit a game, a match, based on my, you know, how I personally feel? Or am I just going to say, you know what, this is how the U.S. deals with its criminals, and I've got to accept that living as a part of the society and play this match. And, yeah, so...
I mean, tricky. There's more nuance to it, of course, than just, like, exactly within the framework of, like, you are sitting down and engaging in a literal game of magic. So, like, as people who have been to the Pro Tour, Matthias, for instance, as someone who has worked with successful teams, you could tell us sort of the best way to achieve greater success on Magic's largest stage is to have a robust network of friends who are good at the game, and the way that you cultivate those relationships and sort of come across as a likable person is to be social, is to go out and, you know, to go to bars after tournaments, for instance. Yeah. You say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think, especially at that point, getting, you know, as Magic is still not, you know, it's not a fully professional sport, getting onto elite teams is certainly just as much who you're friends with as to what are your achievements.
And so in a world where a lot of people use intoxication as an excuse or as a means to commit sexual assault, there are certainly concerns outside of tournament venues as to sort of who you're socializing with and in what contexts. Like, are you willing to get drunk around someone who has, you know, a prior conviction for exactly that sort of behavior in exactly that context?
That's an interesting question for sure. And that kind of brings up another topic that was encompassed in the debate that was going on last weekend, which was how much of a responsibility does Wizards have to make players aware of something like that? And not only, you know, how much responsibility do they have, but how feasible is it for them and how appropriate would it be for them to make players aware of something like a player's prior convictions? I think that, for one, I can't answer on the side of feasibility because I don't have any perspective or information on that. But I do think, in part because, you know, because there are people who would be more concerned about something like a prior sexual assault conviction, would it be possible for someone with those concerns to be able to find that information out at an event?
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, so are you saying, like, right now, people with felony sex convictions, you know, for example, like, there is a sex offender registry, which I believe this player is listed on. Drew, you were able to find and post his information at one point. And you're saying you want something, like, you'd like something in addition to that, something maybe more accessible or more magic specific.
Well, I suppose it comes down to something along the lines of, like, how something like the registry, how easy is it for a player participating at a tournament to use that tool?
So, speaking sort of to Matthias's point, the only reason that I knew about this is that I was looking for a deck tech, and an article from 2004 about this exact incident happened to be in the top 3 Google hits, and the information was, you know, easily found in the public record, in as much as Google can be representative of the public record. And so I certainly don't think that hearsay is something that Wizards should be responsible for or in the business of propagating. I think that, and sort of on a separate level, I guess I also don't think that Wizards is the right body to be responsible for buying access to federal and state sex offender registries and databases and cross-referencing them to DCI databases on, like, first and last name, and, like, collecting whatever other information is needed to, like, make a solid match. I don't think that that's necessarily something we want the DCI to be in the business of, but
yeah,
you know, there are other ways of doing this.
Again, that seems like it starts to come to the line between providing a place where players feel like they are safe and they can focus on playing Magic, but also it's starting to blur that line where it's getting into invading someone's privacy, overstepping their bounds in terms of meeting out a punishment for a crime where this person has already received, you know, punishment through the justice system.
You could Sorry,
if I can step in for a second.
Sure,
I mean,
go ahead.
To be fair, when you get a sexual assault conviction, one of the things you are forfeiting is your right to privacy about that. That's why things like, you know, this public registry do exist. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even see it so much as an invasion of privacy because, you know, I don't think that these people get to be private about that fact. But at the same time, I do think I'm coming down on Drew's side where I don't know if I really want Wizards in the market of saying, okay, now Wizards has to cross-reference these sex offender registries, and Wizards is taking the steps to notify players that someone with a previous conviction is at a tournament. There are better apparatuses for that, to be sure.
It just reminded me of, you know, would it be a parallel to say, oh, if I'm going to this certain grocery store, I want to make sure that the grocery store is responsible for me having a safe experience when I'm in there based on the other people who are inside, or perhaps even a convention for, like, some kind of professional thing that I'm involved with at work, right? I wouldn't expect them to do that in that environment. I don't know.
That's a very apt analogy. When you go to these events, whether you're going, again, to the grocery store or to a sanctioned Magic tournament, you are making your own personal choice to enter that environment, with whatever level of information you have armed yourself with previous to that.
So Drew, going back to your example of saying, okay, this is someone I would be uncomfortable going out for drinks with, which I think is pretty reasonable. And when are you stating that as just kind of a fact of the situation, or if you're looking for a remedy for that, are you hoping that would come from Wizards, or just, like, from the community as a whole, or what do you, you know, like, I guess follow that out to where you see that going?
Oh, so I was more framing it as a venue that we sort of haven't been considering when we're talking about exactly what space the Magic community exists in. For example, we've been, you know, having a long, long community-wide discussion about, like, how the Magic community is this very gender-skewed community. Right. Why don't women play Magic, and how do men, in particular, go about successfully recruiting women to play and engage with and stay in the Magic community. And then on coverage, inevitably, you hear about sort of women who succeed in Grand Prix top eights, because you can still, I believe, count them on your two hands, and women who succeed in Pro Tour top eights, who you can definitely count on one hand. And
on one finger, so, I believe.
Yeah. I think it's just still Melissa DeTora. I could be wrong, in which case I sincerely apologize, but I mean,
I unfortunately really think that you both are correct on this count.
Yeah. But the larger issue is, at the point where you're saying, you know, it's important to provide equal access to all of these elements of the game, one of the elements of the game, indisputably, is networking your way up to sort of more successful teams, people with more Pro Tour experience, working with them, learning from them. And the venue where that sort of starts is many times a bar. And a bar, you know, socialization mechanism is alcohol.
Absolutely. And this kind of, I've just been thinking about this while we've been discussing it. And this kind of leads me to a really interesting intersection where I look at it and I say, okay, so we obviously agree that yes, even if you have prior convictions, we believe that you are still should be and are allowed to play Magic at tournaments. And, you know, socialization is part of that. So are we looking at women and saying, well, if you are feeling unsafe in a situation, if you have cause to feel unsafe, are we putting the burden on them to be like, well, if before you go out with a group of people, Google all of their names and see what comes up? Because I feel like that's a dialogue that happens a lot in the U.S. is putting this burden on women to say, well, protect yourself from this situation. It feeds into kind of the dialogue that we hear again and again of, you know, don't walk by yourself late at night. Watch what you're wearing. Don't drink too much, especially if you don't have friends around. And I feel like it kind of borders on this line of, well, Google the people that you're going to go hang out with before you hang out with them. So I guess for me, that kind of enters that very interesting gray area where I have to ask myself, if I take that position, am I putting an unfair burden on women who are trying to participate in the community?
And that's super legitimate and one of sort of the more basic rationales for spreading this information is that, you know, there are women who may want this but may not know where to look for it, may not have the capacity to look up every single person that they're going to interact with and for whom it would be a boon for them to be able to make more informed decisions and more informed choices about where they consent to being with whom at what times in what contexts.
Yeah, so I feel like, once again, as with the solution to many problems in the modern age, we're kind of walking in this gray area where there never is a great answer to the problem. We look at it and it's like, yes, I agree that it is unreasonable to expect the DCI to, you know, have access to records of convictions and to cross-reference all of them for a tournament. That would probably have to be many people's jobs for each event, considering the amount of time and work that would go into that. But at the same time, you know, as I just said, I feel like we are once again uncomfortably placing an unfair burden on women. And so, you know, where is the happy medium between those? It's a difficult thing to find.
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely want that information available, you know. So part of the idea of like a rehabilitation based, you know, sentence is that I talked before about safe spaces and you know, somewhat of there's a burden eventually where you have to say, okay, you have to prove that this is really actually being unsafe. And I think it really is important for women that this information is available. So, you know, no one's saying that you have to go out and, you know, that you need to go out and drink with this person if you're not comfortable with it. And I want to make sure that people can make that informed decision. I guess it's touchy because at the same time, you don't want to tell a player in that city, you know, like, if someone is convicted, if someone has an offense of a long time ago and there aren't, it is, you know, if there's not proof that this person is specifically unsafe still in this situation, I don't know. I
think that you can't draw a sort of short statute of limitations on that. I think that that's imposing your judgment personally a little too much. I think that if someone individually thinks, you know, this was right. a long time ago, that's fine. Absolutely. And I am happy that someone feels safe in that situation. It is also entirely reasonable and understandable to say the vast majority of the population never does this, and even once is too much, even a long time ago. Or, you know, what is the statute of limitations? Is it was 2 years ago, that's like too much, not enough? Like 5 years ago, too much, not enough? 10 years, too much, not enough? Like, where do we draw the line, and how personal is that line?
And I think I just want to bring up something that Matthias said, which is that he feels we have a right to know this information about somebody, and that you're kind of forfeiting your right to privacy when you are convicted of such a crime. But there are a lot of people that disagree with that statement, in that, you know, we have a justice system. This person served whatever sentence they deemed was, you know, correct for whatever crime it was. And in order to have like a functioning, you know, society that believes in rehabilitation, we need to accept that and kind of like move on from there and leave the past in the past. You know, there are people that believe that. And I don't know, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, you want to acknowledge it as a point of view that someone might hold.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you're not retrying a person for a crime they're already convicted. But no, I mean, because I think especially sexual offense is something that does threaten people's physical safety, there is a reason why you still forfeit your right to privacy as far as people knowing that you committed that crime at one point in your life.
Yeah. I felt like kind of along this line, one player last weekend who was engaged in the discussion made a tweet that had the interesting point that I felt that it's an unspoken, we have an unspoken expectation of victims that they are going to carry the burden of what happened to them the rest of their lives. I wouldn't even say it's an expectation. It's just an unspoken fact that many victims will carry the experience of what happened to them for the rest of their lives. There is, you know, there is no American system that we can put them through to say, oh, guess what? Like, lucky you, you know, you're going to serve a sentence of
suffering.
Exactly. You're going to serve
your
a sentence of suffering.
Your PTSD is only 8 years long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
But your PTSD got out on parole in, you know, 6 months. So lucky you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, congratulations on that. And that's like, I kind of look at it. I agreed with that perspective in terms of, again, we don't talk about it much, but they are going to, we don't know the extent of one individual's suffering in relationship to a crime. And that is something that can persevere. And so are the ramifications of having committed a felony offense.
So Drew, one thing I wanted to give you a chance to respond to is, so you're not advocating, it sounds like, banning this player from events in particular, but some of the things I was reading and some opinions that I believe you were voicing, but I wanted to give you a chance to clarify it, was that while we don't want to ban this person from events, it's like you want to encourage us as a community to basically shun the person out of the community before their offenses.
I think that you have that basically right. I think that there are choices that we make every day about sort of the spaces that we create and who is made to feel welcome, and they are not always entirely compatible choices. So you have groups of people and you don't get to have both of them in your community. And so I guess a personal example that I kept returning to was, if there was someone who played at my local game store who had burned down a synagogue in their past 10 years ago. I'm Jewish, for reference. they had burned down a synagogue. They had, you know, neo-Nazi tattoos, but they hadn't done it since. And, you know, they'd served their 10-year sentence for arson or whatever. Would I want to know, and would I have the expectation of my friends that they not just be cool hanging out with this person who had committed an act of racist violence against people like me for who we are? And so at the point where you have this incredibly specific act of violence toward a group of people, there are going to be people in that group who aren't comfortable engaging communities where their aggressors are welcomed. And that's true even of people who haven't specifically been victims of that type of crime or that exact crime. And so how do you balance the comfort of people in that group versus people who have committed that crime? And sort of how do you decide how far you want to go in making a space truly safe and welcoming? And this, I'm arguing that there are choices.
Yeah, this was a point that I had trouble with, because I feel like you can extend that to nearly any community. You know, like, say this person gets run out of the magic community and then try, you know, just starts playing, I don't know, basketball. And they get run out of a basketball community for the same reason. Like, I see your point where there will be people who will be incompatible in the same community. But at the same time, when it's possible, I would like to have some sort of understanding, I guess, between the parties in the community. Because otherwise, I mean, and this is something that does happen with people with really public offenses, and not, is that, like, what community can they join then? You know, like, I don't want to chase them with pitchforks out of every single community they try to do. At that point, I'm not sure that our system, like, at that point, I'm not sure our justice system is doing what it's intended to do. So especially, like, in this situation where I said, okay, I understand that there will be people who will be uncomfortable having someone like this in our community, and that we may have to choose between them and having this person in our community. And given that choice, yes, we would want to, you know, yes, you're making the right decision here. But I'm saying, is there a way that this can be more can we have them both here?
And sometimes the answer is no, right?
Yeah, I think that this interestingly comes back to in general, the question that we were talking about before, which was the burden of providing information that allows people to make informed choices.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to speak to this too, because we actually, running a parallel in the comedy community, which Megan and I are a part of, is like, what kind of jokes should be taboo in a set, if any. And I kind of come from the opinion that I don't think that there should be a blockade on anything, and that the community will eventually self-regulate. And so if there is information available, and, you know, it's not like a horrible bunch of people, hopefully, which magic is not, the ship will right itself. And if people, you know, find out about this individual, they don't believe that they are reformed, or they just take such offense to their past actions that they just kind of move away from them, well, then that's just the nature of the community. And maybe that's what we can hope for in such a scenario.
I think that it may be dangerous to classify the community as this monolith, right, with entirely shared values.
Yeah, absolutely.
No problem. There are spaces within the community where people aren't going to welcome folks who have that sort of history, and where survivors and people who feel particularly acutely, they know survivors, they, you know, are related to and so on, feel better about engaging in explicitly those spaces. And creating those safe spaces within a community for people like that may be the end result of this entire conversation. In which case, that's still awesome. That's still people finding sort of sub-communities where people share their values and they can have practices that they feel comfortable with.
Yeah, and I guess as we move toward the coverage and angle of this too, which I think we're going to get to in a bit here, but That's, I guess, what I'd ideally like to see, is I would like to see a spot where people who are, you know, survivors or people just, you know, with the feelings they do have about this subject can find a space that they feel safe in the community. But I would really like to accomplish that without running all these people out. You know, I would like to find a way for that to coexist.
I think it's really interesting. I just, give me a second while I try and draw a little bit of an extended parallel to this. But essentially, what a little bit of what we've been talking about is this angle of, particularly for survivors of sexual assault, it could be particularly difficult to have to interact with people who have been convicted of sexual assault crimes within Magic. And during the Reddit conversation about this issue, there were it's okay. Yeah. Yes, it was quite long. I felt like there were a lot of people who again took the angle of this is an individual's private past. You know, any convictions are part of an individual's private past, and they should be, in terms of being able to participate within something, they should be forgiven. You know, it should be acceptable for them to participate at whatever level they would like. And I think it's really interesting that if you then look at the cases of something like players who have been banned for an extensive period of time, like Alex Bertoncini or Jared Betcher, where you look at those people and it's like, I think that when they try to return to Magic, if they try to return to Magic, which Bertoncini has, and it's always turned out, you know,
poorly. He did not receive poorly. The hero's welcome, if no. That's what you mean.
Exactly. I feel
also
like there is...
didn't really do a great job with it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's a very fair point when we're looking at it. You look at him and you say, well, in that case, the punishment that was meted out did not, in fact, help that individual progress any in their personal journey. But you look at those two people and you say, no matter what, I feel like when they enter into the community again, people are not going to be forgiving because they are perceived to have wronged the Magic community. They took a set of people, the players of Magic, who trusted them to play honestly, who love Magic, and they ruined that experience and they ruined that game for them. And there is very little forgiveness for them. And I think that if people who have very little forgiveness in their hearts for Magic cheaters can maybe try and take that feeling and use it to empathize with people who feel that someone who has committed a sexual assault crime should not be forgiven. Which I'm not saying that that's my personal opinion, because I have some very complicated personal views on empathy and forgiveness. But I'm saying I believe that if you take that angle, if you look at forgiveness of Magic cheaters because they have done something so personal to the community.
Or lack of forgiveness.
And you say, do you know what? There is a community of people who feel very, very similarly about sexual assault, that they cannot have room for forgiveness and that they will not have room for forgiveness. I think it's, you know, and it helps us understand.
That's one of the big things too, with seeing such a male-dominated discussion, I think, is kind of that lack of empathy or understanding what it would be like to be in this situation and kind of like checking your privilege, right? Checking the white male privilege.
Yeah, well, what I think is... Megan, you said something really great where you said, okay, people are really hostile to someone like Alex reentering the community because we feel like he has committed an offense against the Magic community. So, and I think because of such a male-dominated community, what we sometimes don't realize or we don't always feel is like, this player has also committed offense against the Magic community. But because the Magic community is so male-dominated, I don't know if it always realizes this. So... like in this, so I'm not saying we can't welcome someone with that offense back in. In fact, I really like to think that we could. But so say, like, for example, in 4 years or 3 years when Jared Betcher gets off his ban, right? I would like to think that players like that could come back into the Magic community, but I'll be picky about how I might want it to see happen. Like, would I be okay with Jared playing a Friday night Magic and being able to play Magic again? quite possibly. Would I want to see him back on the pro tour? Like, well, no, someone who has cheated his way to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of winnings, I'm not sure that's a space I want to welcome someone back into. So, like, you have to be careful about how you readmit these people into your community after they've committed an offense. And that's what I want to see with this as well. Like, I would like to invite him back in, but no, at the same time, you know, as a social community, do I want to go take my friends out and go drinking with him? I'm not really sure about that one. That might be a space that I don't want to welcome him back into. But I'd like to think that we could, that there are some things that, yes, he can still be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do we want to move on to the discussion about coverage?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like this, I want to acknowledge that this is a conversation that could probably go on forever.
That's true.
especially if we open it up to anyone who wanted to participating.
Oh, gosh.
but that's also part of, you know, the interesting aspect of it is that it's a constantly evolving discussion. So we're going to move on to kind of one of the unique aspects, I think, of the conversation that was happening last weekend, which was the debate of should someone with a sexual assault, battery, or rape conviction be allowed on coverage? And then a subset of that, is that type of conviction different from other convictions? And why or why not? So we'll let one of you guys go ahead and start us off on that.
I differ entirely to Matthias. He has the most expertise here by a lot.
I would. Why don't you guys start on it? I have some stuff on it, but go. Why don't you start?
Okay. That's fair. So I guess, and to some extent, Matthias and I talked about this a little bit the other day. So I'm a little prepared for. I know the track that his argument is going to take, but I think for me, I would say that in a perfect world, no, they would not be on coverage. And yes, it is different from other types of convictions, because unfortunately sexual assault is so prevalent, and so many sexual assault crimes go unreported. And, you know, that also leads to this likelihood that there are survivors of sexual assault who are playing magic and who are watching coverage. And to support and acknowledge them, I don't think that someone who has been convicted of a charge like that should be allowed on coverage.
I'll just weigh in. Maria here. Being in the background of broadcasting, which I am, this is a tough question, right? Just on the standpoint of what is Wizards trying to offer the community by having these broadcasts? And what does it mean to them if they were to potentially black out a feature match because of this? So I feel like, personally, I would rather that they do not feature this person if at all possible. But if it comes down to it in the end, like if they, you know, if it's the finals, then they've got to go ahead and do it. And I don't see that reflecting. I personally don't feel like that reflects negatively on Wizards, because I don't know if it's their job to make a moral say this is our morality by either showing or not showing this person. I think their job is just, I don't know, to try and do as good of a job as they can of broadcasting this tournament. Yeah. And you know, it's on the viewers whether or not they want to sit around and watch that. I don't know. That's just where I'm coming from.
So I guess I want to extend on the point you're making here, and as not as far as what should happen, but what can and will happen with coverage. So I guess there's a lot of different things you can do. Like, first of all, it's been suggested, can we coverage ban this person? That means just we will refuse to show him on coverage in any situation. And if that one, I don't think actually can work. It might be the most morally consistent one, and one that I wish we could do. But then the question is going to be, like you said, what happens if this player is in the finals? Are you going to feature him or are you not going to feature him? So first of all, if you run the line that we're not going to feature him, then you're running the risk of having a tournament and blacking out the finals of a tournament, just going to the semis and saying there is no, you know, we're not going to show the finals. And as Magic more and more becomes a coverage-driven sport, which is definitely how it's heading, coverage numbers are increasing by about 25% every year. That's going to become really unacceptable. As far as, you know, I would say as most coverage, like Star City Games and WotC, while I can't speak for them, given the idea that I would say by allowing this one player into a tournament, I have to risk blacking out the finals of my tournament. I can't imagine these companies are going to even allow the player to enter. It's just simply too big. Like, that's not a price you're willing to pay. And on the other side, you can just ban this one guy right out and stop it from happening. And one of the issues here is actually with the player we're talking about. He's actually, like, this is a real concern. The player's good at Magic. If you have him in enough tournaments and you commit to always blacking out his matches, this idea that you'll have to black out a finals probably will happen at some point. So,
I mean, this person's been in multiple Grand Prix top eights. I have no doubt that they will succeed again.
Yeah, he 8-0'd day one of a pro tour in the last year, I believe. So, yeah. You know, good player. So you'd have to be able to willing to do that. And I don't think anyone's willing to do that. So if you're going to go far enough to say 100% coverage ban on this player, I think then by extension, you're just going to have to ban the player from your tournaments. And you already kind of said at the beginning, I think most of us said that that's not something we want to, you know, that becomes very dangerous when then suddenly Wizards and or Star City Games start doing that. So the question is, what can you do? And I've heard the word shadow ban thrown around. So this is kind of what Maria was alluding to, where you don't feature the player whenever possible, but basically you're only going to feature him in the finals or, you know, in situations where you have to feature him. And you don't make it official, or maybe you, because making it official is really awkward. It's because a lot of times with how coverage plays out, you don't really know when a must feature situation is going to happen. So you would just say then behind the scenes, you know, like your coverage team would make a directive of, hey, we're not going to feature this guy unless the tournament forces us to. And while I think that's actually pretty consistent, I don't like how that plays out. So that has happened to players before. I think notably players, and probably you guys even know the situation I'm talking about. And this was when Alex Bertoncini first got unbanned. A lot of players said really noticed that they were people, you know, Star City and Wizards were really doing a big effort to try to not feature him. Frankly, because we weren't sure if he was, you know, he had just come off ban. We weren't sure if he was cheating or not. And as it turned out, maybe he was. which is, I mean, maybe this is good. But what actually ended up happening is there was a situation where, you know, you'll have these top eight feature matches and we'll show you three of the quarterfinals and then we cut to break. Or there'd be these really awkward situations where at one point Alex was the only undefeated player in a tournament and we just weren't featuring him and weren't really mentioning him. And because it's so artificial to do that in coverage, what actually ends up happening, I think, is everybody starts to notice that you're not featuring the player. And then they start to ask why you're not featuring the player. And then it becomes a big issue and it blows up on Twitter and on social media of why you're not featuring the player. And your initial idea of shadow banning someone was to decrease their visibility. But by doing this to them, you're actually increasing the visibility of the player, even though you're not having him on camera as much. So I think that might be a great idea. I think it actually runs counter to what you want to have happen.
I think that there's another side to that, though, which is you are right. The Streisand effect, as it's known, is very real, taken from a point where Barbara Streisand tried to get a picture of her house taken off the internet, and then everyone saw the picture of the house.
The effect
is named after that.
If there's any metaphor that Magic players really love, it's a good Barbara Streisand metaphor.
Barbara Streisand is resonant with everyone. I refuse to hear otherwise.
She is universal.
So the Streisand effect, as it's known, is if you try and hide something from the internet will only amplify it. And so I agree that if your goal is to decrease this person's visibility, you fail miserably by banning them from coverage. But I don't think that that's actually your starting point. I think your starting point is coverage represents the brand of the game. This is Magic. And for many, many thousands of people each weekend, this is what they see Magic as being. And so if you say these people are Magic and these are the stories we want to tell, and right, Matthias, you can provide a lot of context into sort of how you craft narratives of players over multiple tournaments. But these are the stories we want to tell. These are the people we want to follow. And these are the people we think are worthy of following. By explicitly not covering a person, you are deciding not to tell their story. You are deciding to signal to the audience, this isn't a person worth caring about. And when the audience says, hey, this person did really well, why didn't you feature them? They'll be able to find information from other community members.
Right, you exactly don't explicitly answer it, but you just, yes, they'll
right.
know.
I mean, the community members will be happy to tell you exactly why Alex Bertoncini wasn't featured until the finals of, I think it was like a Syracuse Open, where he played against, hilariously, Jared Betcher.
I mean, he top fored an invitational. That was probably the one where I remember covering it, where this, yeah, there was one point at which I believe a graphic was shown where we were showing the players to watch board, and it showed first, second, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, or something.
That's awesome. And
it
was just, and like, he's third.
And he's third, yeah. And yeah. then he's just not on the list. And you're like, that's really weird. That's, yeah. Yeah. It looked terrible.
So, Matthias, but, do you have any opinion on what should be done?
So what you can do, and I think Drew's really pointing on this, is in terms of branding. So you don't want to have a hard and fast rule of, we will not feature this player unless you have to. Because perhaps his opponent is someone whose storyline I do want to feature. And maybe our player in question is doing well enough that, yes, he's on table one, playing the guy I do want to feature. So now he's not on camera as, we're not telling this guy's story, but he's on camera as, you know, player B's opponent, which is a storyline we run often. You know, if you look at early rounds of a Grand Prix, or like early rounds of a Star City Open, you know, you see like Brian Bronduin versus Brian Bronduin's opponent is basically the story I'm trying to sell you. So as long as you let him be the other player's opponent in your storyline, I think that's fine. I mean, because one thing to, you know, you want to have good players on camera. If you're building up a storyline of another player, like, yes, this guy's a very skilled Magic player. And I think you can sell him so far as like, yes, look, he's at the top of the tournaments a lot. The community will get that he's good. But as far as, you know, do I want to have him produce versus videos? Do I want to, you know, talk about him in terms of like players of the month? Or do I, you know, there's lots of ways. I mean, especially Star City Games really does brand its players, and it wants you to know who the good players on the Star City Games circuit are. That's important. And I definitely, that's something that you can, at the top, make a decision to decrease the visibility of a certain player for sure. You know, don't have him write for the website, for example. And don't follow. Generally, what we'll do with the tournament is we will start with a list, and you see it on our players to watch board, of about five players that we really want to follow this tournament. And we're going to tell you their stories until some of them start getting eliminated. And as they get eliminated, when one person falls off the players to watch board, then we'll try to find you someone else and find you a new story to tell that we can pick up on. And we can make a conscious effort to not pick up on his story at any point. And I think that's something that we can do. And that would be my approach to it. And But as far as being a hard and fast rule of, I won't feature him unless I have to, that one, yes, I think that runs afoul of the Streisand effect, as we're calling it.
Yeah. I just want to take a second because I feel like we've directed a lot of this discussion about last weekend's incident specifically, but I want to look at sort of like, we're interested a little bit more in talking about kind of the overall picture. And so I guess earlier we were talking about how we don't think that it's reasonable for the DCI again to cross-reference every single one of its players in a tournament with people who have committed federal offenses and have been convicted. But is it like, do we have a reasonable expectation of, you know, them doing that research for someone who's about to be featured in a match, so that we're not just talking about one player who everyone now knows has a conviction, but we're talking about any potential player who could be featured who has a conviction.
And the subset question of that is what kind of convictions are we sort of drawing the okay and not okay line on?
Well, as I think this will happen more as coverage gets better. So right now, when you started, you had basically coverage was kind of follow table one a lot of the time. So then you'd get this player with a convict with a felony that you wouldn't really know because you'd never done some research. I think at least I can't speak for Wizards coverage, but I can speak for Star City coverage, is we are more and more becoming intentional about the players we want to follow during the tournament. You know, right now it's like, if the players who are, we're really focused on the season two invitational. It's in, you know, it's coming up here. It's in less than a month. So we're really trying to focus on any player who could win the season two championship. So, you know, you go into an event, we say, okay, right at the top, you know, hey, is Ross Merriam in attendance? Is Gerard Fabiano in attendance? We'd really like to follow them. It's been a great story. And as we start becoming more deliberate about who we're following during a tournament, then the number of players you have to vet becomes a lot smaller. You know, a lot of times these are players that we've known. You know, Ross and Gerard aren't new. They've been around for a couple years. There are sometimes a couple new players. Like, we have some players in the top 16 that we've never seen before. Okay, so I think two of them. There's like two new names in there. Maybe it would behoove us to go and just do some research and make sure that these guys are on the level. And make sure that we really would like to feature them.
Yeah, as Drew pointed out, a quick Google search often Oh, the magic of Google.
It'll tell me about a felony at the very least.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think at least from my personal perspective, and again, being one of the two out of four people having this conversation right now who is not in broadcasting, but as a viewer, it would be my hope and even my expectation, I would say, that especially now that this topic has been one that has come up for conversation in the community, that would be basic research that's being done before, as you say, you decide to invest in a person's story and to tell that story to the magic community.
And this is a growing pain of coverage in magic. Sorry, and then I'll let other people in. I realize I'm kind of dominating here. Is that I think when magic was first starting, we were just following good players. And you see us with Wizards a bit, the first couple years of coverage, is that, I mean, and Star City, we followed some pretty unsavory individuals. And after we'd invested in them, we realized we were covering blatant cheaters. We were covering people who were just really horrible individuals, like people who were jerks. We have a lot of, and it took us a lot of time to move away from that. And sometimes, like fortunately, some of the players, the cheaters got themselves banned. Okay, so that was great. That was a pretty easy out. In Wizard's situation, where I think they covered some players who were just pretty insensitive individuals, they had to just have private conversations with some of the guys and say, hey, you need to stop flaming people on Twitter, and we mean it. Otherwise, you know, and I think that was a lot harder for them because they didn't realize that they had put all this investment into people who were jerks until the damage was kind of done. They'd made them into names.
Yeah, absolutely. And Maria had brought up the subset question, which we touched on briefly, which was what kind of convictions do we draw the line at? And as I mentioned at the top of this section, for me, I do believe that sexual assault convictions are a unique case. And for me, that is the line. I guess I would probably throw murder in there, but
we were having this discussion.
Extreme violent crimes against people is a perfectly reasonable line that encompasses what you want it to encompass and has the effect that you want it to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a situation for Wizards, I think, where one player got banned without getting banned for being publicly drunkenness at a Grand Prix, and I think there was an embarrassing incident. They didn't DCI ban him. But they basically told him, do not show up to events until we tell you it's okay.
That's accurate. I can confirm that.
And yep. I would say, like, again, going back, like, sexual assault, and then also, and this I feel like feeds into creating a safe community, but it's like Drew so aptly said, you know, crimes, like violent crimes against a person. Because that for me also includes anything that it's like, oh, if they have a violent crime with, like, potentially nasty, like, racial implications, that would again be something that I would very much expect to lead to essentially what we can call a shadow ban, or what Matthias was talking about was choosing not to focus on a player's story.
Yeah, but there's different ways to it. Yeah, you can choose not focus on them. I mean, the incident I talked about was more strict than that. I believe was just actually told the player, like, don't show up or we'll have to, you know. Unfortunately, the player just did that, so I don't think anything official ever happened, but...
Yeah. All right, well, we've been talking for nearly an hour, which is mind-boggling.
Is there anything that we didn't bring out that either of you wanted to mention before we wrap up our conversation?
No, it's been really thorough, thank you.
I'm really happy that we had this chance to talk to both of you and that both of you came forward and said you wanted to talk with us as well. And I'm happy we could have some female voices in the conversation because I don't think it's relevant. And that's something that I hope, you know, people can take away from this is even if they like completely disagree with everything that was said here, that maybe they take a moment to stop and think twice about somebody else's life experience versus their own. That's my personal hope.
Absolutely. And like Maria said, thank you both so much for being willing to come and have this conversation with us. We really appreciate it and the many different perspectives that you brought to this talk.
Thanks again for having us on.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to respond to anything that they've heard on this program, you can send us a tweet at MTAcast. If that's not enough characters, please send us an email, magicktheamateuring@gmail.com, with your opinions on this because we'd like to hear all perspectives. Hey everybody, that's this episode of Magic the Amateuring for this week. I hope you enjoyed both the serious and the silly parts of the show.
And maybe it made you think a little up in your think tank plank place. What did I say?
Think tank plank?
Oh, God.
That's when you're doing, like, the yoga pose plank. And you're thinking.
And you're thinking really hard.
Which you're not supposed to do in yoga. I think you're just supposed to, like, breathe.
My yoga person is like, I want you to focus on something in your life that you want to send your positive energy towards. It could be a person or whatever you want.
Oh.
Do you know what I think about?
I've done that at the beginning. But what? What do you think about?
Drift. Just kidding.
I was like, okay.
JK, you guys. Anyway, like we mentioned, we are going to be at Vegas, and that's coming up here really soon. So if you're going to go, make sure to follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. MTAcast. Another thing entirely. MTAcast. And we will post when we might be available sometime for a meetup for any fans of the show who want to say hi and get some super sweet swag. So yeah, follow us on Twitter. Be sure to look for that. If you want to have a chat with either of our guests from the previous segment, Matthias Hunt's Twitter handle is at MTGMatthias, and Drew Levin's is at Drew Levin.
Wow, those are difficult to remember.
I know. Super hard.
Good luck, guys.
If you guys found this episode valuable or funny in any way, please consider donating to our Patreon account. That's patreon.com/MTAcast. We're almost at $100 per episode again, which will enable us to make draft videos for you every single week.
And say what?
Put them on YouTube.
What?
So go there and donate as little as $1 show if this podcast means something to you in your heart, in your tummy tums, in your brains, or, you know, in your feet. Go there and do that. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, mtgcast.com, and themeatery.org. Megan, blow that train horn. Take us out.
Toot, toot.
I said blow the train horn, not fart.
Honk.